Secondly, I want to explain the nature of briefings. We receive a briefing so that you can better assimilate a bill or a report which you receive. So you can have a briefing at any point in time. The sooner the better, so that everything you read in the press, everything that comes up around this time, you have had a briefing, a very effective briefing, one hopes, that will take you forward. We're not here to slow down the work, but rather to expedite the work under this mandate. And I know everyone works very hard in this committee, and the same people in this committee usually have several other responsibilities, political responsibilities, and very onerous they all are. But we do want to try and do our work as our priority in terms of the Parliamentary Portfolio Committee work. The second issue I would like to address, as I said, when we had a preliminary meeting during the oversight, I would address this then. The program is being absolutely finalized with respect to the issue along Fridays, and what I believe is going to work better than what we adopted in previous years would be at least to give it a try, and that is to have an extremely long Friday once a month, and then to try as much as possible to avoid Fridays for the full committee. The subcommittees may meet, and so can the Manco, but the full committee, we should try to keep this down to one meeting in the month, but that would mean from 8:30 until 3 or 4. It would be a full day. So we'll just decide on that with Mr. Herman's trying to manage the program there. Those of you who haven't had anything, tea, coffee, or a little bite, should do so now, please, as I welcome the DG and members of staff. Thank you. Just a minute. I'm going to adjourn for just a few minutes while Mr. Herman's briefs me on the program. Thank you. On the looking at the apologies here that we have, let's first adopt the agenda. Before we adopt the agenda, I would like to place DTI before the NRCS, please. And the rest of the agenda as it stands, except, now we do need to add one tiny thing in here, and that is to just begin on the issue of the oversight and what may be outstanding in the requests that were made regarding the oversight visit. So that would be a very short engagement of just 5 minutes for a clarification. So that DTI are here, we are here, and we can just confirm what is outstanding. So place that first for 5 minutes, and then we carry on to the DTI. The apologies which we have written ones, we only have one, and that is the Honourable M. Congi. the only apology we have. On that note, can we have somebody to propose the adoption of the agenda? Thank you, Honourable Mike Tush, seconded by the Honourable William.
Thank you.
Yes, we do need an email for that effect. The Honourable Esterhazen is attending Energy, and he will join us later. Right, let's immediately move into the oversight issue. I'm only aware of a response, two responses received from the National Regulator for Compulsory Services, all right, both from the NRCS as well as DTI. We also have, we don't have a letter from the Foundry, and I understand they were requested to give us something in writing. Put that on record, please.
Chairperson, we received the outstanding responses from the entities that we visit and the companies. We're just compiling those responses. With regard to the founder's response, we will bring a copy of those responses to the committee meeting now, as requested. But all the other responses were received, and we're just putting it together, and we'll distribute it later this afternoon.
So do
we
have the Foundry letter?
The DTI, in the DTI's response, the issues that you
see. Yeah, because I would like that redacted.
Coming up.
Right, thank you. Then we've had all the responses. Is that clear? Right. Okay, thank you very much. We can immediately then, and just record, Mr. October, I don't know if Ms. Gonf is here at the moment because I can't see Ms. Vici. I know Mr. Khan, I've seen him here. Right, thank you.
Thanks, Honourable Chair. As you indicated, we're presenting the third quarterly report. The way we'll deal with it, we'll just quickly outline the key objectives, and then we'll go through the key achievements, and then we'll look at the financial performance. As usual, I'm not going to go into the slide, which you are very familiar with, but just to remember that all our activities is aimed at two major objectives, which is transformation through industrial development and inclusive growth. So those are the two strategic objectives which are imperatives that inform our entire program and sets of activities and so on. So I will start, as you know, the period covers 1st of October to 31st December. We kick off again, as I said, with our core objective, which is industrial development. We want to just give one of the case which highlights some of our achievements, but also some of our challenges. We highlight here that MTU, engineering company, they have upgraded their workshop facilities in the Western Cape, and they are now producing locally the diesel engines for the Transnet procurement program. So this is a major achievement through our designation, and therefore for local companies to be able to expand capacity to supply and not for Transnet to import these products. But of course, we can only deal with that side. But I must say, inform Portfolio Committee, a number of these companies who are supplying Transnet are struggling because of the demand side, because contracts have not been are not rolled out timelessly. So as I said, we can support the supply side through incentives, but a company needs, as you know, any economy is driven on the demand side. They need to be able to sell the product that they produce, and there has been delays. So we are in active engagement with GPP and with Transnet to try to expedite that they fulfill the terms of their contracts with these companies. But then we turn to the other parts of industrial development. As you know, we're working on a new sector, which is the aerospace and aviation sector, and there we've assisted in the formation of a commercial aviation manufacturing association. As you know, we do have very strong niche capabilities in this sector, and we see this as a potential growth sector, and this is part of that strategy to be able to get more export growth from these companies. Then again, there's the tooling initiatives. As you know, we secured through our procurement, we secured the Danish investor AVK to produce the valves locally and to supply the water department and TCTA and others. And here we have an investment again in the castings for the production of these valves. Then, as you know, we've got an extensive program on foundry capacity building. As we know, our foundries have been have become depleted, and the DTI put in program a program to revive our foundries, because as you know, the foundries is the foundation for a strong industrial sector, and we list some of the activities with Ajax, IX, Malcast, and Forbes, where we are assisting with building our capacity in the foundries. Just some of the other sectors we are looking at and have been working on. Again, we note again the progress we are making with business process outsourcing. As you know, we are becoming we're starting to emerge as a global player in the BPS market globally. And here again, South Africa was named in this quarter for the annual outsourcing destination of the year in the UK. And as you know, because of the Brexit, we are hoping to now deepen our links with the United Kingdom, and one of the key sectors that we are cooperating on is in business process outsourcing. So that event is very important, and that's why we attended that. Then other niche industries is cosmetics. As you know, as we grow South Africa's middle class, there's biggest spend on cosmetics, toiletries, pharmaceutical products, and here we can see a 6-point growth, and as I said, we've established a team to work on this sector. Similarly with plastics, and then again in terms of green industries, SAVs have initiated the thermal test chamber, and that covers support for the green industries. As you know, we have a program called Industrial Participation, which is usually called Offsets Program. Although it has been diminishing because of localization, we're no longer just going for industrial participation. We're asking the companies to produce locally. But there are still two areas where we've made some progress, which are electronic devices, and also we've landed a very big contract and supporting local manufacture for the manufacture of smart meters for export market, using and leveraging this offset program. Also in marine services, which is another niche sector. Going further, in terms of the designation we did for this period, here we designated firefighting vehicles, and this instruction note was then published and issued by the National Treasury, and I'm pleased to report that following the local content verification, three of our companies, Actum, Solid State Power, and Actum Solar, have complied with local content requirements. So as I said, that brings, I think, the number to over 20-odd designations that we've done now. But at least we will be supplying all our firefighting vehicles locally. And then this other important area, which is our work in terms of beneficiation or trying to go into primary metal sector. As you know, after the successful operation Pakisa for the mineral sector, we've developed a plan to both support the mining industry but also to ensure the value addition. The DTI is responsible for certain core programs around that, especially in terms of capital equipment and the formation of different structures. So here's the processing cluster, which has now received additional money from Gauteng, and we've set up it's a hub at the moment, but we're hoping to turn it into a center of excellence for us to again reestablish some of our capabilities in the mining industry. We also, the DTI-IDC delegation, visited the second deepest mine in the world, Tautona, to observe a new form of technology, reef boring equipment. This will prevent some non-explosive extraction, but this will basically revolutionize some of the drilling and the excavation required for mining. And as I said, this is part of the work around developing South Africa's mining equipment sector. Also, we're working with the Department of Minerals, and really we are urging them to really fast track the adoption of the Mineral and Petroleum Resources Development Act, because this thing not only deals with mining but also deals with downstream oil and gas sector, which we are keen on expediting. Then turning to trade, investment and exports, we are participated in a number of events. It's the one in Turkey, the World Association of Investment Agencies. Then we also assisted the Deputy President in his visit to Singapore to open up that market. And then we've also been working on the review of the South Africa-Saudi Joint Economic Committee, and that was done in December. And then we're looking at some of our outward missions. As you can see, we've covered quite a broad range of areas, from promoting leather and footwear in Italy to green economy in India, again, technical investment in India again. And as I mentioned, there was also an outward investment where we took our companies to around BPS in the UK. And then also in terms of agro-processing, which as you know is our key sector for this year, and we will be developing a new incentive program for this sector, is agriculture and agro-processing. Here we're working with DAP to expand our markets into France, Germany and the Netherlands, and this was also just post the EPA. Also, sticking with the trade and investment front, we're pleased to report the successful opening in one of our IDZs, Dubai Tradeport, Yangtze Optics Africa Cable, that was opened in December. And as you know, we've just released a book about the investment one-stop shop where we've landed 12 key investments in 12 months. So this caps then the 12th investment for the year, and we're calling the one 12 in 12. To highlight some of our achievements. So this is the last one for the year. The Interministerial Committee, I will report a bit later on this one, but we've made really good progress on, for the first time, getting the entire government and all departments to agree on a set of priority investment projects, from water to rail to agriculture and so on. I will report on that later. As I indicated, in terms of the Europe, is still one of our biggest markets, and therefore the work on France, Germany and the Netherlands is key. And then we also obviously, the one-stop shop is just the apex, but we work with the provincial investment promotion agencies, that's your PIPAS, and we held a workshop with all the provinces to really coordinate and syndicate our work around FDI with the provincial agencies. Sticking with that, this is a very important area of work now that we're doing with the World Bank. South Africa currently ranks 73 out of 190 countries for what they call ease of doing business. Of course, we want to significantly improve that number, and for that reason, we have now signed an agreement with the World Bank where we will work on all the things from getting electricity connections to water licenses to EIA. So we've entered into a formal relationship with the World Bank to see how we can improve our business processes. We then also held an investment workshop with all the provinces, municipalities, and stakeholders in this sector, altogether 74 stakeholders. So what we are trying to do, as you know, lots of these bottlenecks and delays occurs at municipal level or at provincial level or at other departments level. So this is why in one process with the World Bank and all these tiers of government and agencies, we are trying to agree a proper program to improve all our business processes so that we really implement this idea of a one-stop shop, quick delivery of investment services. Carrying on about that, as I said, I wanted to turn to this issue now. As you know,
under our investment, South Africa Invest SA, we now have an interministerial committee which is chaired by the president. And we report to him. Out of this process, we've now agreed a pipeline of 40 projects, which covers all the sectors of our economy, from agriculture, agro-processing, energy, infrastructure, beneficiation, and manufacturing. These projects, I'm pleased to report, was then accepted last week. Cabinet endorsed the full list from our interministerial committee, and that is what the president announced. About Invest SA is now properly established. It has now 40 key projects that it will be unblocking and working towards. Then turning to the trade side, we, as you know, we're working really hard on the continental free trade area, which is one of the key initiatives of the African Union, and we have been working within our customs union, SACU, to advance our position. We've also started to coordinate much more tightly with something we call KENSA, which is Kenya, Nigeria, Egypt, and South Africa, which is your four largest economies and four maritime economies on the continent, and we're hoping to use this sort of network or grouping to drive, to fast-track the negotiations on the continent and also to deal with multilateral issues. Also, I'm pleased to report that the EPA, after many, many years of negotiations, came into effect provisionally in October and during the quarter under review, and this now opens up the agricultural market access for us. As we will report maybe in another occasion, whilst we open up our their market to us, we unfortunately also get dumping from their poultry products. But as I said, but at least we have opened up for our wines, for our processed vegetable products, and also for ethanol and sugar. We are now opening up that market. As I indicated, we supported the Deputy President in terms of increasing trade with Vietnam and Singapore. We also participated in the CL Paris Trade Fair. This is one of the biggest fairs globally. And there, on the spot, it was 25.5 million was reported in terms of orders. And over the next 6 months, there's reported export orders of over 2 billion rand.
Just a quick interruption, DG. What is the SIL?
It's the food trade fair in Paris. The facilitators, South Africa, Russia, this again is, as you know, we've got a South Africa-Russia Business Council, and we have participated in November in the Intergovernmental Committee around that. We organized two very successful state visits. The one was to Kenya and the one was to Zambia. I was fortunate to, for the first time in 5 years, attend one of them. So I attended the one to Kenya, and it was a very successful. As I said, Kenya is the heart of the East African economy, and we're strengthening our links with them. Just some of the VW South Africa has opened up a new Volkswagen plant in Kenya. Exchanged an MOU with Gambia, and then we've also engaged, as you know, we're working actively on the integrated national export strategy, and we have engaged with all the stakeholders in terms of really getting some coherence in terms of our export promotion, and then again in terms of building capabilities for exports. We can report two new export formations, the Publishers Association of South Africa and then the Aerosol Manufacturing Association. Again there, we participated in the first BRICS trade fair. As BRICS tries to deepen the relationship amongst the five countries, we took 32 companies with us to this trade fair, and it generated 171 trade leads. So turning to then special economic zones and economic transformation, we have the, as I said, we successful work developing in Kuga, again
In that month, we can report that the clearing of the land and the launch of the Beijing Automotive Works investment, the big investment. That one I can report, I was there in December, and they had cleared the land for handover this month to the company, and they will be able to start construction on the, for the new auto plant, first automotive investment in 40 years in South Africa. We also then signed an agreement. We are trying to really land this investment, Cipla, which is producing anti-cancer drugs. It is a major, major investment because they hope to produce cheap cancer drugs just as they did with ARVs, lower the cost by almost 90%, and they will use South Africa as a hub for that. So they signed the lease there with Dubai Trade Port. Saldanha, again, the positive progress with Saldanha. The pipeline is 34 investments, which is about 14 billion. They have received firm letters of commitment, and as you know, the pipeline is starting to roll now with regards to these investments in Saldanha. OR Tambo IDZ, again, also, that one is slowly being revived. And attracted 260 million new investment covering horticulture and metal refinery. And then this is an important one, and I see, as you know, we managed to, there's a meeting of the Energy Committee this morning, but we have really been working very hard with Department of Energy to fast track this, but two of our IDZs have been allocated 1,000 megawatts for Kuga in terms of the IPP for the gas energy project. And that investment, so we're really hoping that Department of Energy can finalize this with Eskom and others so that we can get Kuga, we'll be able to then even move at a faster pace. Similarly, in Richards Bay, they were awarded 2,000 megawatts under the gas IPP, and again, we are pushing that this be fast-tracked. We've worked on, as you know, the Industrial Parks program in this period. We launched the work we've done in Isitebe Industrial Park in KZN, and then Queen Industria Komane in the Eastern Cape was also launched in November. And then again, as I indicated, we hope to make this a major area of work, and we called all the stakeholders because, as you know, these industrial parks are owned by agencies of provinces. And we are trying to really get them to put significant resources and management time into revitalizing these parks. So we held a symposium at the Development Bank with all of them to try to agree a joint program on the revitalization of these parks. And then turning to CCRD and our legislation and regulation, the two that we completed in this period was the Performance Protection Amendment Bill, which has been certified by the State Law Advisors and is currently before you as we speak. And then the Copyright Amendment Bill has also been finalized, and that is now, I don't know if it has been finished, but it, submitted to the State Law Advisors in the third quarter. Then turning to administration and coordination, as you can see, we're doing extremely well on the vacancy rate. It's down to now from double digits a few years ago to 4.4%. But again, we can't crack this issue of women. We're still at 49. I'm hoping one of the senior managers will have to do a Caitlyn Jenner or something to get us to over this mark. We're doing very good on disability, and we're doing very good on eligible creditor payments. Again, we're doing 99% within 15 days, and hoping to set a track record for the rest of government. But we, as you know, we're also following up after your engagement with the Auditor General. We've written to the Auditor General to make this part of the auditing of all departments so that SMEs can get their payment. And if you have a proper system in place, you can pay companies really quickly. Then turning to the financial performance, as we know, by the end of December, we spending stood at 7 billion rand, or 84% of the budget. there, you get a breakdown, 52% of transfers have been dispersed, 33%, and so on. Let me just say that there is a variance of 22%, which we've discussed extensively with the CFO and the finance team. Those variances, I think we have made up and with a lot of it, and there's no serious cause for concern. A number of those variances is in terms of outstanding claims. As you know, before we make, especially the big payments in autos and other sectors, we need to have the required documentation, and I know that the number has been paid in January and especially in February this year. So we hope that the variance will definitely, over the full year, we should bring it down again to minus 2%. Transfers and subsidies, as you say, in this area, which we have done almost the full allocation to our agencies and in terms of our budget. Compensation, that is also at that's 96%. We're on track in terms of that, and in terms of goods and services, we're also on track. So the main variation has been the area of the incentive payments, especially to autos and others. So this gives you a full breakdown then of our budget. But as I said, I can report now. I've just spoken and confirmed it with the CFO. We will be on track to again achieve our targets with regards to financial performance. I'm not going to go through this slide, but let's just say that we have achieved over 80% of our performance indicators. I think out of the 31 targets, 27 were met. One of the key ones that wasn't met, which I maybe will deal with under questions, but as you know, our target for the year was by the 30 black industrialists, 25 black industrialists for the year. As I said, it was six we achieved quarter three, six. As I said, because it's the first year of the program, and as I said, we obviously had to send back a lot of the applications because they were not of the standard that's needed or in terms of financial viability, in terms of feasibility, and so on. We've now put in place a system. The committee is now starting to meet regularly. As you know, the committee consists of IDC, NEF, CIFA, PIC, Land Bank, and so on. But we're confident we'll be able to achieve the full target for the year in terms of the Black Industrialist program. As important, we hope to then accelerate it in the new financial year. But on the whole, as I said, 27 of the targets were achieved. And we just take you through in some detail those targets for the different programs, Program 3, Program 4, Program 5, Program 6, Program 7, Program 8. And Honorable Chair, that then gives an overview of the key highlights of the quarterly report.
Thank you very much.
That's
quite interesting set of achievements. We note the issues under challenges. Let me open this up to the floor here. Members, we'll start off with the first round, 2 minutes each, and then we'll go for a longer round. Honourable Williams, who did I see there? Honourable Hill Lewis, just a minute. Winston, put your hand down when I mention you. McPherson, Honourable McPherson, yeah. Honourable Cornell. No, I'm just looking up again, don't worry. Honourable Muntash, Honourable Munskulfig. In that order, please. Honourable Williams, 2 minutes each, first round.
Thank you, Chair. I'd like to thank the Department for the presentation. I've got a few questions. The first one is, when we got report from the Auditor General, It highlighted that one of your places that you're not doing so well is the reported performance information with regard to industrial development was not reliable when compared to source information. I'd like to know if you've done anything to make that a green instead of a red square. Also, they talked about HR management was concerning to them, proper record keeping was concerning to them, and I'd like to just know, there were a few others, but I won't mention them, what are you doing to address those? But other than that, I'd like to know about, we've got this industrialization where we're moving for beneficiation, localization, and then we go on oversight to this foundry where we find that the wheels that they're supposed to be making for Transnet haven't received orders from Transnet, and it's resulted in that company beginning retrenchment proceedings. And so I'd like to know, what follow-up do you do with the companies that you give money to see whether they are in fact given the opportunity to expand and to create employment? Because it seems that you give the money and then you pull away and let them do their thing, and then now they're collapsing. Now this particular foundry we went to said that they had engaged with you about this issue, but they weren't getting any help, any assistance. And I'd like to know, what are you doing about this? Because it's actually, it's reversing everything that we're trying to do. And the DTI needs to really step up to the plate here and solve this problem. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Williams. Honourable Hill-Lewis.
Thank you very much. A brief question. Could you please give us a status update on the progress of the investor centres under the Invest South Africa program in the three provinces? I believe you were starting in Gauteng, Western Cape, and I think it was KZN. Yeah.
Thank you, Honourable Hill-Lewis. Honourable MacPherson.
Thank you very much. Can you just give me an update on the industrial parks with respect to the first lot that had been done? What progress have you made with securing rebates or incentives from local municipalities and provincial governments? And also, if you can tell me what, if any, new investments by companies into those industrial parks have taken place yet. With the IPP, have Eskom actually signed agreements to buy that power? Because we know that there's an ongoing battle between independent power producers and Eskom to actually buy their power. So have those contracts been secured for those for the 2,000 megawatts that you spoke about? And can you also just give me an update where we are with the MSEP program and what negotiations have been taking place with Treasury with respect to the new allocations for the 2017-2018 budget to keep the program going?
Thank you. Thank you, Chairperson. Just two questions. The first one, we know the vote has been done in the Commons with regard to Brexit. Is there a specific strategy developed by the DTI to fill the gaps from us towards the United Kingdom in terms of trade agreements or near ones? And then secondly, it was an issue in the State of the Nation address on Thursday, the 500 billion power that the state have in buying power. Will the DTI make sure that that is happening, or will it lie with another department? It adds on to the question that the Honourable Williams have said, that the Transnets and the Eskoms, are... Sometimes we're getting the feeling they're trying not to do business with those guys they should do business with.
Thank you, Honourable Kornhoff. Honourable Manta.
Chairperson, thank you. I only have one concern that I wish the DTI can respond to, whether, as the department, do they have a sort of a working relationship or a cooperation? Because we have observed in the oversight, that the entities that you fund, or that are funded by your, the companies that are funded by your incentive, are given contracts at some point, and those contracts become just white elephants. They don't get business. Same as what Honorable William said, and also Eskom, and I wanted to check whether you have any relationship with the Minister of Energy.
Thank you,
Honorable
Minister. Thank you,
Chairperson. I would like to welcome the presentation made. And when looking at the economic partnership agreements, you've mentioned that there is this thing of the dumping in the poultry sector. And I have the concern that we know that already the poultry sector locally is in distress. So do you have any plans to ensure that this thing can be minimized in order for us to sustain jobs and not shed jobs in that industry? And also I would like to comment, when knowing that we have this concern in terms of the SMEs that's always complaining that they receive their payments late, but at least in terms of this department, we can commend them on the 15 days that they basically pay this. It's really encouraging. I'll pause there, Chairperson.
If we look at page 25, the point made about claims that could not be processed as they were found to be non-compliant with the guidelines, what kind of challenges are we looking in this direction? And what has the department done to overcome that or assist those applying to overcome it? The other issue is on the disabled. What is the actual government target for that? I see we're sitting at that. We may be over the top or under. The other issue is around the time frames. We were, of course, we visited Saldanha Bay some time ago, the IDZ there, and at the time we thought they'd made great progress, and of course it's a very deep water area and it seemed to hold out all sorts of good fortune for these rigs, etc. Now, but what we have learned from visiting these IDZs and the investments, the letters of commitment can be constrained by various impediments that arise, which has actually happened. So what kind of timeline? It's 34 investments, 14 billion, but what are we looking at? And having said that, we would want to be briefed by the department when such a letter of commitment is facing a withdrawal. People are going to say, right, look, this is the deadline now, we're going to take it out. So we can be kept right on board with that one. The other issue is on those list of 40 targets. It's very impressive to learn that our cabinet colleagues are finally, able to align themselves and reach consensus on the 40 priorities. What are these 40 projects that have been prioritized as such? And the other one was 27 and 31, which, as you said, is broadly performance, and indeed there has been a rather positive approach to it. But it may be possible for you to unpack the challenges that have been experienced. Thank you. Over to the DG, thank you, and the team.
Starting with Honourable Williams, I think yes. The AG raised the question of performance information and meeting with our baseline. That is one, as I mentioned, for example, we do skills training and we get, we do it jointly with, or we get funds from the skills fund. So when we report on, for example, some of these training programs, we report the full figure.
which is how much we train 94 people a quarter or a year. But then the AG, and we're working with them, we're having a full workshop with them. They then say, no, we mustn't report on the 94 because DTI only contributed 70% of the budget, and we got the 30% of the budget, even though we got it out of the National Skills Fund. We mustn't report on that. So there's been those sort of minor, really, issues of how you report on things. But what we are doing with them for the new audit, we are having a full one-day workshop with them so that we sort out these kind of things. Because remember, the year before, we reported on the total. And then the following year, we reported, as I said, we again reported on the total number of students, and then they said, no, you mustn't report on it, and so on. So we will agree a consistent way of reporting on performance information. As I said, we're working intensely on the HR side as well, so that we report properly on that. I think Honorable Williams and other speakers have raised this important thing, and Chair, you have been highlighting it all the time, is the issue of the DTI, and then when we give companies incentives, they then don't line the contracts. Now, as you know, economy is a very complex thing, and DTI plays the role of a facilitator. Now, unfortunately, we are on what you call the supply side of the economy. We assist the company with giving them support to raise their competitiveness, to assist with the machinery and equipment that they get, so we can directly support that. Of course, the company must sell their products. And actually, if you look at any economy, and after Keynes, we know that the principal driver on economy is not what you do on the supply side, because everybody can produce, but not everybody has a market for their product. So we, as I said, we do active facilitation, and especially with Transnet, we've taken them and the RIPP program. These are the two programs that have been has slowed down significantly. We've raised it, our minister have raised it, and we've interacted at the official level, at ministerial level, to say to Transnet, you have to implement the program that you agreed to. Transnet then says, but they have financial difficulties. The market has slowed down. They cannot continue their capital investment program as they originally undertook, and therefore they can't sort of carry the economy because they have to take into account commercial principles. We've told them that we don't buy that argument because they are state-owned companies, and it's the role of the state to move counter-cyclically to the market. We can understand if you're a private company, of course you can't produce when there's no demand for your product. But if you're a state-owned company, that's precisely what we say is the role of the state, is to come in when the private sector lags, you must push up. And when the private sector thingy, you can slow down again. So, but as I said, we've now made a breakthrough, and it comes to the later question on renewable energy. I'm hoping, I don't think there's any contract signed. As I said, we're meeting again with the Department of Energy tomorrow morning. They're having a portfolio committee meeting as we speak, but we have, and that is why our, especially Invest SA, has been championing this issue that Eskom gives a clear and absolute commitment to sign those RIPP contracts. So we're hoping after today's meeting, the DG will report to the committee this morning that they, that because we had meetings with both Eskom and with the Energy Department, and as I said, we're hoping tomorrow morning, we've got a meeting at 10 again with the DG of Energy to consolidate this matter, because as you know, companies have closed down in the renewable energy sector. And as you know, we landed that big investment in Kucha to do wind turbines. They are also going into liquidation. So that's a problem we have with the demand side of the economy, where, as I said, and that's why we're raising it formally in every forum we can. But we're saying that state-owned companies cannot be a law unto themselves, and they have to. They are state-owned. Secondly, then Lewis, I think thanks for that question on the status of the investors. I think we're pleased to report that it's going very well with the three. We will be launching our own one. The national one has been, the building has been completed, and the offices have been furnished, and that will be launched later this month or early in February. We're just getting for the president or deputy president to come around to open the national invest SA. Then the other three provinces, I mean, the Western Cape is proceeding very well. We were going to even do a walkabout last week in terms of the investment one-stop shop for thingy. Gauteng is on track, and KZN is also on track. So they will all be launched as per the plan. As Honourable McPherson, as I said, as we indicated to you in the report we gave to this portfolio committee, our role again in these parks was one to stimulate interest in this work, which properly speaking falls under the provinces and under development agencies in the provinces. But we've completed the first phase in about 10 of them, which is the question of security upgrades, mainly enclosure, fencing, and so on. So phase one of it has been completed in final completion this month, and we will then be moving into phase two, which is then to look into support for the actual investors in the zone, where we will be able to support them with not only basic infrastructure, roads and other things, but also upgrading of their facilities so that they can, in terms of the out structures, the roofing and top structures of these investments. As I said, as we indicated at this issue, we then raised with at the stakeholder workshop we held in November with all the provinces, we've asked them all to put in place a system of, as I said, one of the big advantages we have is to be able to offer cheap rentals as one of the best incentives we can give, cheap rentals. So we're working on a program with them to see how that can be their contribution to this program. We are, as I said, we have set aside a budget for then helping with the top structures with the actual investors and so on. So, as I said, we will again in the course of this year give you a full detailed report on this program, because this is one of our key programs with the thing, and we hope to also bring some of the provinces and municipalities to the hearing so that they can hear directly the importance of this program. As I indicated, we'll know tomorrow about the IPPs for ESCOM, what is the timelines for signing these IPPs, but we hope it will be very, very quick immediately. I think I'll ask Malebo to just give you an update on the MSEP. Brexit, yes. As you know, within the European Union, obviously Germany and UK are our biggest markets, and our biggest one actually is the UK. So our strategy there, we've done a position paper and we've given a report to Cabinet on our approach to that. But as you know, so what we want to ensure is that once they exit within 2 years, from that there's absolutely no disruption to the trade. So what we want to ensure is that the preferences stay in place or equal to what we currently have, at least continues immediately after the two-year period and so on. We also have started interim discussions. Our minister met with the Brexit minister and the trade minister in the UK, and we also hope, actually, even though we can't formally start negotiations because they are not supposed to enter into any negotiations until they finalize their divorce proceedings. But we have set out an understanding that we will actually look at enhanced, not only maintain the existing what we have with Europe, but to also have actually an enhanced relationship with the UK. And as I said, because of our common language, common history, and so on, we think, and they are less protectionist of the agricultural sector, unlike Spain and Italy and those countries. So we hope we can actually have a quid pro quo, where we maybe give in for some of the services side, and they give in more agricultural market access to the United Kingdom. But I think we are keeping in close liaison with them on that. In terms of the buying power from Honorable Kuenhof, yes, as you know, we've DTI has been struggling for 10 years with trying to get the 30% set aside. We were told it's unconstitutional, you can't set aside, and we've been fighting even when we had the days when we had small business under the DTI. We've said every contract, 30% must be set aside for small businesses and black businesses. Finally, that was signed off on the 18th of January with Treasury, as I said, after the long work in the cluster. So we, the department which will playing a big role now is the Department of Small Business Development, which will overseeing this. But as I said, we are really working actively with them in the cluster to see that we use this procurement budget to assist. We also, in terms of the 40 project, Honorable Chair, which you asked, I've got a list now, which is the 40 projects, which is, for example, there's 9 agri-parks in the projects. No, it's not in your thing, it's just from our thingy. It has everything from the IPP to the Hisense and so on, Clover Park and so on. We are working actively on ensuring that we coordinate very tightly. Honorable Mantash, as I said, man, we have to get this right of both stimulating the demand, the supply side and the demand side of the economy. So that's why the reason we fought so hard for this thing of procurement. And we've even launched even the Buy Back South Africa campaign with the manufacturing circle. The key thing is, if you want to industrialize, you must at least capture your domestic market. And we, as I said, we had a lot of people buying. So it's part of, as I said, demand. So big demand in South Africa is demand from state-owned companies. Mm-hmm. Actually, if you take the big 5, Eskom, Transnet, Prasa, and so on, they play a big role in buying from companies. And as I said, we really are working hard to try to see that they supply work to local companies. That's why we've got the designation in place, which we got 3 years ago. There's a regulation that the DTI, the designation process, we've done over 20, I think it's on. So this is part we're working again very hard with Proudly South Africa again. They'll hopefully be relaunching the Buy Back South Africa campaign, so that it's not only the state that buys locally, but also we get all consumers to buy locally. And in that way, we create demand side. But as I said, that is not a simple thing like you can with an incentive. You can decide to give it or not, and you can fast track it. So the supply side is much easier to do. The really difficult part is always to get the demand side right. But as I said, that is what you found at Gastro, where, as I said, they can only get that contract from Transnet. And as I said, we are engaged with them. As I said, I'm meeting tomorrow, and we are also trying to secure a meeting with DPE again. Honorable Van Schalkwyk, thanks for that. Just on the poultry issue, as you know, we've set up a task team now with Department of Agriculture and with the industry. As you know, with regards to most of our imports was coming from Brazil and other countries, and we then raised the tariff. For example, for the chicken, for pieces of chicken, we did it at 37%. We did it for whole chicken, 80%. We raised the tariff to try to protect the industry. So that has worked to some extent. But then what we found is what they call the frozen bone-in chicken, which is the brown meat, which is your legs and your thighs. And now what you have there is it's mainly coming from European Union. Now, as you know, we've got a free trade agreement with the European Union, which means there's no tariffs between us. Now, the problem is, and it's not the American chicken, actually. The American chicken haven't even taken up half their quota. Apparently, the chicken is too big coming from the U.S. or something, but it's not taking off the U.S. chicken. It's not a threat. It's coming from Europe. And the reason it's coming is because, as you know, in Europe, they only eat the white meat, the best, which South African consumers don't find tasty enough. And we go. So what happens in Europe, they dump. They use for animal feed, they use the brown meat, what we call the brown meat. So it has no value in the European market. So therefore, it is easy just to export it so they can sell it into South African market at any price. So in a sense, it is below production costs. So that has been coming into our market. Now, and that is why, for example, RCL has to close down that line because they are no longer competitive in boning chicken. They are competitive on the whole chicken. They're competitive on the breast side, which they've supplied to KFC. They're very competitive. So they're keeping all that lines, but they're closing down the boning chicken line. So what we've introduced, the minister introduced, under the new EPA, for the first time we have what we call is a safeguard. You can, if your industry is under threat, you can impose a duty. So the minister imposed in December a 12.5% duty on the European poultry. Obviously, the EU commissioner has gone into massive fighting mode. They've objected to us because they say when your oranges come into our market, you cry if we don't take it. But when our poultry come into your market, you cry. But our minister has got a clear said that we have to fight this one. We're actually going to try to increase that safeguard, not only not drop it. So the minister met with the EU commissioner on Friday, and we are telling them that they must understand that this is a peculiar structural problem. That we cannot, they cannot, this bone-in chicken is a peculiar market, let's say, abnormality. Mm-hmm. That's because of the peculiar arrangements but they will destroy our industry if we allow it in, and so on. So this is obviously, but as I said, we've tried to get all the players together, the industry. We also, as I said, we're looking at support to the industry as well, but again, it's a question of consumers. If nobody's buying, if the consumers are buying the chicken from the European Union and they're not buying it from Rainbow Chickens, it's a problem. Because obviously it's cheaper, so people will buy the cheaper ones. Chair, I asked Malebo to deal with the incentives and the delays. But really, it's, as you know, because of the request, we have to have tight conditionalities for the payment of our incentives. So when people apply for incentive, they must tell us what's going to happen, how many our jobs are going to improve, and so on. So what happens is the company then applies for the incentive, we give it them, but they don't hit the job target. Then we actually have to be hardball and we have to say, we're not paying this tranche. Then, of course, the company says, but I've got the machinery, I've got this thing now, and so on. So that is the thing, but we said, this is the target. Your figures show that you said you're going to improve by 20 people, and there isn't the 20 people. So we've obviously, people have targets to meet, and they have to give us the documentation and the proof. As you know, after the first one, we pay the first incentive very quickly, the first tranche, because then we know they're just getting started. But after the second one, we do an inspection, and we then want to see that you've met the target and so on. So the documentation requirement increases, and that is where the delays are. But as I said, it's we're getting it right slowly. We're working with the companies. They're starting to know what is required, and there's definitely progress there. Saldana, Honourable Chair, as you indicated again, these investments, again, you have to make a long-term commitment to these things. It doesn't come in a day, and also things chop and change, because as you know, Saldanha was designated as an oil and gas hub. As you know, the oil industry collapsed. It is recovering now very quickly over the past few months, but for 2 years, as you know, Nigeria is in recession, Angola is in recession, the oil rigs are not coming anymore because they are not drilling for oil now because there's a glut of oil and the oil price had fallen and so on. But as I said, it is recovering now. But as with Kucha, as I indicated when I went to Kucha in December and we did a site inspection, there the 32 investors is in the place. See them, you walk through the call center, thousands of people on the line and so on. But as I said, everybody told us 5 years ago, it's a white elephant. Stop with these incentives. You have to stay the long haul. You have to go through the ups and downs of the economy. But as I said, so therefore, these Saldanha, as I said, we are very impressed. They've got a very professional outfit. They've got a very secure list. They've got letters of commitment from companies. As you know, companies always want to sell their product. You see, it's no use setting up the plant, so they want to know there's a market, firstly, in South Africa, and then there must be the global market. So, of course, once they see that the global market is not growing, they slow down the investment to time it with the market trends. So you find that all the time happening. You always have that. As you know, with our steel plant, when they were going very, Hyundai was moving very fast to get the steel plant, but then there was a glut of steel in the world and the people stopped buying steel. So therefore, they just put that one on the back burner until the market conditions is right. But as I said, we have to build our capabilities for the long term. And that is why we've got the 10 IDZs that we're working on. I'll just hand over to you.
Thanks, Chair, and good morning to the members. On the NSAP, we're continuing our discussions with National Treasury on both the competitiveness package, which is what was where NSAP comes from, and also the tax incentive 12I for its continuation. So for the competitiveness package, we have a commitment of around 1.3 billion from National Treasury, and the minister will make the announcement probably shortly on how that 1.3 billion will then be used going forward. As I think both minister and DG have always said, that we will always look at our programs, see where we need to improve, where we need a sector-specific program, prioritize those where it's necessary, and then see what else needs to be done. So the competitiveness package may not necessarily look like NSAP, the program that we had before, because we've learned a couple of things in the process. And again, I think there's an understanding that sector-specific programs yield better value than just a general support. So I would probably go with a mix of a sector-specific program plus a general support, including a loan component in that 1.3 billion.
Good morning, Honourable Chair and members. Chairperson, there was a question regarding the disability target. The disability target is 2%, and currently DTI is at 3.32%. Yes.
State that. Achieved. Right. I understand. is a follow-up.
Second round.
Yes, okay, whatever it is. Yes. Honourable Williams, Honourable Hill Lewis, Honourable MacPherson, Honourable Cornell. Anyone else coming in? Happy? Right, go ahead.
Thank you, Chair. I've just got two questions. Gastro, the foundry that we went to, they told us that they got the tender from so that the demand, you know, they've been asked, you know, they got that tender and they were going to supply those wheels to Transnet, and they implied that another company was supplying those wheels now. So we'd like to know, is that true? I mean, do you check on this? If you've given money to some company and then they get a tender through the government procurement program, do you then follow up, and if they're not getting those orders, do you follow up why they're not getting those orders? You know, do you have any say in that, or do you just say, well, we've done our bit now, we've given them the money, and they must get on with it? My second question is, you said 6% of the budget was spent on goods and services, and I'd like to know what goods and services that was, and why isn't it being done internally, because the amount is around 42 million rands. So I'd like to know what you're spending 42 million rands on. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Williams. Honourable Hill Lewis.
I just wanted to follow up on a comment that you made about the set-asides for small business. I saw those regulations gazetted on the 21st of January from the Treasury Department, the Finance Department. And I must say my initial response was not as warm or excited as yours sounded today, and I wanted to ask you about them, because in the process of writing the BBBEE Amendment Act, you will recall in 2013, you came to the committee as well as the minister and made the case very strongly for what we then included in the act, which was called colloquially the trumping clause, because you said that many organs of state and municipalities around the country and various departments have their own empowerment policy which are at variance with the codes of good practice. And therefore, we needed to write into the Act that the codes of good practice are the empowerment policy of the South African government and that no other organ of state can differ from the codes. Now, those regulations have come out, and they've essentially, so far as I can read them, made the codes irrelevant. Because they say that preference must be given to companies which are 51% black-owned, which means that the other elements on the scorecard in the code of good practice are essentially irrelevant. Ownership is the only element that now matters. Now, firstly, my question is, why is that something that you support if my reading is that they, in fact, obviate or usurp the codes of good practice? And secondly, as is required by the Act in Section 9 and 10, the so-called trumping clause that we included, was the permission sought of from the Department of Trade and Industry as is required? And if so, why was it given, given that the empowerment policy of the Department of Trade and Industry is the code of good practice and not just ownership?
Hill Lewis, Honourable Cornwall.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Just a comment. As I understand it, the imports of chicken is only 14% of what is sold in South Africa. And I've heard a comment that if there was no imports of chicken, the chicken industry would have been in trouble in any event. Any comment?
Short, to the point, etc. Thank you very much. I want to follow up.
Sorry.
On... I did forget you. I apologise, Honourable MacPherson.
No, you've previously said that I'm not easily forgettable. I just want to get this straight. Basically, we've spent 200 million rand on the first investment into the industrial parks. We're embarking on the other one. We still to date don't have any incentives or rebates secured with local governments or provincial governments. We're only embarking on that now. So we don't know whether that's actually going to get any results. And I know the minister likes to think that I'm against the parks. I'm not against the parks. What I'm against is doing things the wrong way around. What I would have thought would have been prudent and financially responsible for the department is to say, well, you know, let's look at the business case for the parks. Let's understand who's going to partner with us in these. And once we understand all of that, we've spoken to the market and we said, who's interested in this, then we go and embark along this route. What we're trying to do is we're throwing money at these parks and then saying, well, we'll catch up at some point with the due diligence, if you will. And I want to refute your statement to say, well, the parks offer cheap rentals and that actually would be an incentive. Because Isatebi is actually trying to create market-related rentals in that industrial park. So who would want to invest in an industrial park that has market-related rentals that is sort of 80 k's away from Durban? And that's where I think the project falls short. And I don't think it should be falling short. I think that there's a real opportunity, but it's got to be done correctly. It's got to be done with some forethought. Because what it risks is actually keeping people in poverty if they become white elephants. That's actually what it's going to do. And you're going to have lovely parks in remote locations with nice fences and still unemployed poor people. With regards to the MCEP program, I just want to understand with the, you said you've got $1.3 billion. Over what period is that? Is that for 1 year or is it over 5 years? So it's per year. So what we're doing now, unfortunately, is we're doing sort of a year-to-year program instead of the original project, which was over 5 years. So that had some form of surety and guarantee of continuity. My big concern is that you're going to have a lot of companies that are going to rush at this $1.3 billion, and you know, we're going to be overcommitted as we were in the previous round just because it's popular. And I think that what we should be negotiating for and pushing for is a long-term strategy on incentives and not just a year-by-year program.
Thank you, Honourable McPherson, just on the 2-3 minutes, but I think it was pertinent, the question you were posing in the statement. I don't think we've forgotten anyone else, have we? No. There's just one point I would like to follow up, and it's the issue around the foundries, which, as you said, DG, we really are determined to reignite this because they are the very core of industrialization and so on. Now, it would appear as if Transnet has issued these four huge contracts, and that the subcontract within that, if you like, within the tender itself, has gone to various people. Among them has been this company that is producing these wheels. Is it Gestro? Right. And it would appear from the points raised here this morning that it is not clear. In fact, we certainly know they're not producing these wheels. We know that much. So who is, number one? And we want that in black and white. We want that in a letter from someone. If the DTI can't do it, we'll have to go to Transnet, whoever's got this. We also want sight of the tender in writing, because my understanding of these designations is that it should be produced in this country. But I may misunderstand that, and if I am misunderstanding it, please explain. The third aspect is, why not? This company is quite competent to do it. It would appear, judging from the oversight visit, which I personally did not go on, but which has been reported to me by the acting chair, the Honourable Williams. So I want to get to the bottom of these wheels. I want to know who is manufacturing them. If it is not Gestro, and we know it is not. And then on that We want the documentation. If DTI can't produce this, then please tell us and we'll have to find out who can, which would appear to be Transnet. Please explain clearly the designation issue that governs this. Thank you. Over to yourself, DG.
Thanks, Chantry, and those questions. Just on the follow-ups then, I think your question then relates to what Honourable Williams was asking earlier about Gestro and DTI's role. Is it, as I said, DTI has initiated this process of trying to use our buying power to build local industries. So we introduced this mechanism of designation. So what the DTI does is we look at the sector, we research it, and then we must present a proposal to the Minister of Finance, and we say this sector must be designated. Then we must show research that shows we have local capabilities, that we've done it properly and so on, and as you know, we've done it for some sectors we do 100%, like clothing and textiles, others we do 40%, 50%, depending on our local capabilities. Now, the issue is here is that there's a difference between helping a particular company and helping the economy. The DTI cannot say to anybody who to give a contract to. That is, in a free market economy, that is not allowed. But also it is not wise, because we can never know who is the best supplier to Transnet. They can only understand those particular market arrangements. The only thing we insist on, it must be a local company. Or it must be a company that produces locally. It can be a foreign company, but they must make it here. So, therefore, we don't follow up. It's not a centrally planned economy where we can follow up each and every tender. But what we do is, so our situation is local. So even, for example, with the AVK valves, as I said, AVK from Denmark said, we will not invest in the valve manufacturing until you give us an absolute commitment that they will buy it locally. So all we said to them, AVK, all we can give you is we're going to move on a designation, but we can't say it will be given to AVK. But they said they're happy with that. They're prepared to compete with anybody, but they just don't want Eskom to buy it from India or China. So that is what we work. We can't give a particular company a commitment. We can only give it to an industry. Now, Honorable Chair, we have been chasing up this thing with Eskom, with Transnet. There appears to be non-performance in terms of the local content requirements. Because, as I said, we've received a number of complaints, especially with regards to, I think it's China South Rail, where we've received a number of complaints from local companies. Bombardier, others have all come to say, we are not getting the work, and we don't know where the work is going to, and so on. So I think the people that must answer that question is Transnet. As I said, we've also gone to the portfolio, I've gone with a team to the Public Enterprises Portfolio Committee in Parliament to really persuade them to call in the SOEs and bring them under control. As you know, with you, we've gone to the Auditor General, we've gone again to them again this year to say, please audit every company to see. We are working, for example, in clothing and textile. We're working with SACTU, where we can audit all non-compliance. They monitor every tender issued by every municipality to see that you buy local clothing and so on. We need more watchdogs in all sectors to ensure that people stick to this national requirement, because somehow they are now, in breach of those procurement orders and so on. We're looking at that that regulation of January ourselves. That's what our lawyers as well, and we're giving inputs to National Treasury. As I said, on the whole, it is not as tight as we would like it to be. But as I said, but the two principles that has been accepted in there, the one is they have accepted the issue, and we must strengthen it in that regulation. Because, as you know, the biggest problem with companies like Transnet and Eskom was they were insisting not on the codes, they were insisting on ownership.
And we said that is not what we're doing. You have to specify a level of BEE. Because we are telling companies, do the, like for example, Siemens. They're able to achieve level one or level two. So they've done significant work. Now, why must they be prejudiced when they tender to Transnet? So that's why we've insisted on this thing. So in terms of, so we want that principle established. And it is partly in there. And as I said, we must strengthen it. But that they will use the codes will inform the procurement regulations and so on. Where the one comes in about 50% black ownership is with regards to small companies. What we've done is we have, as you know, in terms of the codes, we said that if you're a small company below a certain level and you're 51% black owned, you automatically level, well, if you're 100% black owned, you automatically level one. And then if you 51% or so, you are a level two automatically. So that we can, so I think, as I said, what we want, so we want Treasury to do is to set aside 30%. Because what happens is, for example, if you take this Metalli's biscuits for SAA, it's a small company in Sarsfield, yeah. So they lost the tender to AVI for producing these little biscuits that you get in, on the flight. Now, that must not be done. AVI can look for export markets. That market for biscuits can be done by a small company. So we're saying, that's why we're saying 30% of the procurement of those tenders must be given to a small business. So, for example, now, even if AVI wins the big procurement contract, they must give aside 30% to small businesses. That was the intention of the... That is why we are very happy with the 30% principle. But it's supposed to be for both white and black companies, but small companies. And then within that, we are saying, and this is where the part on the Lewis, where it's not so strong, they say when you issue a tender, you can specify a level of BEE. Now, that is what our minister has been trying to persuade everybody to say, when, like we did for our incentive, for MSEP, we say it must be level four. For some tenders, you can say this can be level one. If it can go to companies, you can say level two. And that way, you incentivize companies to work harder on their BEE codes and so on. So that is what I was, as I said, I was happy about the principle of setting aside 30% to small businesses of every contract. But I think, as you say, we agree with you fully that we must specify a BEE code level rather than, and if you want to give it to 51% black-owned companies, rather say it must be level one or level two, rather than using the narrow ownership issue. On the poultry issue, Honorable Kuano, I think, as you know, there's a big debate in this industry between the meat importers or exporters and then the producers. And so on. But the one thing I can say which is not in dispute is that, as you know, South Africa, our biggest form of protein intake is through poultry. So this is a real chicken country in terms of... There is space for imports. As I said, the real problem arises where the companies we've engaged with, they're just saying they're uncompetitive in this one area with Europe. If it's whole chicken, nobody in the Netherlands can produce cheaper chicken than we do. So we can compete with them on whole chicken. We can compete with them. As I said, they supply KFC. KFC uses the breast or something. There they're fine. They can produce that competitively and so on. But they can't produce the bone-in chicken competitively because that is dumb. So that is the one area where we have a problem. And unfortunately, South African consumers, we all like just this bone-in chicken part. We actually ignore the rest of the chicken, and that's the problem. And that is where the flood of imports is coming in. So maybe it's the totals is not the most important issue. It's the subsector that is causing the problem in our thing. So you take the line in Hammersdale, they're the ones that they've gone from two shifts to one shift because they have to give up the line on this bone-in chicken part.
Honourable McPherson, again on the industrial parks, I mean, as I said, the DTI has a role. The reason we can't go through this, I think, in a perfect world, we could have done feasibility studies and decided that the problem with these industrial parks, they existed under apartheid. There was not 1 cent of new investment since 1994. So they were run down. All of them are located in township areas and in where large populations reside. The DTI, we've decided we have to revitalize this box. So we obviously don't have the budget to take them under control. They don't belong to us. We don't own them. We don't even have leverage over them. We don't have a law that can tell them what to do and so on. So we play the role of a champion, facilitator, and catalyst. So what we've done is that is why we did the first phase. As you know, many of them, for example, if you take, many of them say they must be commercially viable. So that's why they say that's why we must charge rates. Now, if you go to ECDC, ECDC doesn't want to revitalize these parks. So they say, Dimbaza, it's a loss-making thing. We are asked by this government to be self-sufficient. So how can we put money into a loss-making enterprise? So ECTB again tells us, well, you want us to be viable? So why can't we charge markedly rated rentals and we can run a proper professional industrial park? So that's the debate we have. Our view is that it is, if you look at any country that industrialized, the state must provide world-class infrastructure to the private sector. If you don't provide world-class infrastructure, you are not in the game. So our purpose is to convert these parks to at least from, I mean, there's third world infrastructure there. So our aim is to get them to a state where they can be world class. But we're starting from a third world situation. And we are, as I said, that's why we call this workshop, to tell ECTB, please, a competitive advantage is, like, for example, why are people going to Dubai Trade Port? How do we get simpler there? Because we offer them cheap rentals and we offer them an incentive. So that's why we said to ECTB, you have to offer, once you get the bulk, once you offer cheaper rentals, you expand the base. And then afterwards, you'll have a bigger revenue base to work from. Rather than the few you have, you squeeze to the maximum. But as I said, it's conflicting signals from us. Because on the one end, we tell these companies to be commercially viable and to be profitable and to act like private companies. And on the other hand, I think that was the wrong message. Like as I said, we've had these problems with Transnet where they tell us it's not commercially viable to take on local because it's cheaper to get the product from overseas. But we say those are the costs the economy must bear for that. So as I said, that is... So, McPherson... We are, as I said, we've done the first phase. We know things are improving. As I said, we have to get into the second phase. They are still in a state of third world. They're not even in the second world yet. But as I said, just like with the industrial zones, we must just work persistently and constantly improving the quality of our infrastructure that we provide to these investors.
Thanks, TJ. The question around the goods and services budget. The goods and services budget that's given across government is the operational budget for any department. It's largely driven by your day-to-day activities. Looking at the DTI's one, almost 50% of our goods and services budget is towards our PPP contractual commitments for the DTI campus. Another big driver is our payments to CETA for the maintenance of our IT infrastructure and IT network. And as I said, it's your day-to-day budget. We've got advertising, we've got communication costs. So all those are your daily costs which are budgeted under the goods and services budget line.
Thank you.
Chair Thompson.
No, thanks, Chair. Just on the issue of our programs and the certainty that we need to give to the investor community, this is exactly the level of negotiation we have in with National Treasury. They've already set aside that $1.3 billion, but under very difficult fiscal circumstances. So we couldn't reject the $1.3 billion because it was a year. But our negotiation with them is for a full program. That's why we're talking to them on the tax side and also on the grant side. Like I said, we're also looking at a possible reduced working capital facility, so that at least from a working capital point of view, we can have a self-generating fund that is not necessarily subjected to the fiscal swings. Thanks.
Thank you very much, members. We now come to the end of this particular item on the agenda. I just want to reiterate, DG, if it would be helpful to us if we could get a list of those projects and a few of the other things that were raised. As I understand, this tender then would be coming from from Transnet itself, but as you reiterated yourself here, the designation, its purpose is localization. Explain that very carefully. And we need to ensure that is being pursued. That is the very purpose of designation, etc. And we've agreed that the Auditor General has also agreed to help here. So it may be pertinent for us to correspond with both National Treasury, the Auditor General, and, of course, Transnet itself in this regard. But I think those are the few of the outstanding, and I'm sure you will follow up on anything else there. But we must thank you and also congratulate you on exceeding the target for disability there, because many departments are not achieving even the target, let alone exceeding it, etc. So well done there, and we noted the minor sort of, what is it, 0.1% and the gender issue, etc. And I just wondered statistically if it wasn't a question of the rounding off and you couldn't have half a person, you know, which does happen. All right. So thank you for coming along. We do appreciate that. Thank you very much, DG, Mr. Khan. And also, is it Ms. Mabiti Thompson, are you going along or are you staying? All right. Okay. Thank you very much. Members, we are breaking for tea. We've got on my watch, it is now 10 past. Can we just break, about half past? We want to start again.